Patrick Dolan joining us. Mike Leonard in the second hour. Patrick Dolan here on the phone lines in the first hour. Patrick, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, John. How you doing? Sounds like pretty tough weather.
Okay. Are you going to admit to the listeners right now that you're in California right now?
No, I'm not going to admit that, John.
Patrick Dolan and enjoying a little break, but no break from Let's Get Legal. We appreciate him joining us. You're an employment lawyer, Patrick. I think most people who listen to this show regularly know who you are. But if we got some new listeners, as we always do, why don't you remind us who you are and what you do?
So I am an employment lawyer. I help people with their workplace issues, whether it be on the hiring side, a contract negotiation, or advising them on those sorts of issues, helping them with anything that's going on in the workplace. Maybe they're concerned about compensation or they feel like they're being treated unfairly. And then when they leave, help with their separation agreements. And I often talk about things like non-competes and making sure that they get what they deserve on the way out, too. So pretty much the entire workplace and employment situation.
That also is your cue, listeners. If something squirrely is happening at the workplace, or maybe you got laid off and you think you were due more money, or you're just hired and there's something strange in the employment handbook, anything, you can call right now, 312-981-7200. Patrick Dolan will do his best to kind of generally answer your question and offer some feedback to your question. 312-981-7200. The phone line's open. We always get some good responses and some really interesting questions. Patrick, what are people calling you about at your office lately?
Well, still, you know, non-compete issues. And I think people have finally figured out that non-competes did not go away. They are still enforceable under certain situations. And so they have a lot of questions about whether they can take that next job. And so the analysis starts with the language of the agreement and then what they did in their current job and what they want to do in their next job. So there's a lot of questions there, John. People are really concerned, obviously, when they leave their job, what they're going to do next and whether that's going to be limited. So we still have a lot of non-compete related questions, which is still enforceable.
Have you got any calls from federal employees yet? Because there is so much confusion about all sorts of things regarding the quote unquote buyout that's been offered to federal employees. There's questions about the legality of that buyout, whether the money will ever come or whether it should even be able to be there. The courts are going to have a lot of work to do to sort it out, Patrick.
Yeah, I've gotten a lot of phone calls about that. It sort of went away when, you know, a couple different federal judges stepped in and stopped that process, at least temporarily. John, you know what the problem is? We don't know what's going to happen. We know what the Trump administration is trying to do. We don't know what the courts are going to do on this issue yet, but people are understandably very concerned about it. And so I think we're far from finding out what happens on that issue with these federal employees.
Are buyouts in the private sector a common thing that you run into? What makes this complicated from a government perspective? To me, it seems like, okay, well, maybe they're just trying to buy people out to lower the payroll a little bit, like private companies tend to do from time to time. Where does this get murky?
Yeah, it's a totally different analysis. So here with the public employees, the question is, does the Trump administration have the right to force all of these folks out in these different agencies, et cetera? That's a totally different question. And then a private sector where buyouts, they're pretty common, John. I mean, you sort of extrapolate a little bit and talk about reductions in force or large layoffs. That's more what we're talking about than buyouts in the private sector. But that definitely happens.
Yeah, in the public sector, I know one of the complicating factors is, you know, there's this, you know, the executive branch obviously runs the federal government, but the legislative branch is the purse that allocates funding to go where it goes, and then the president signs a budget. So they're operating, President Trump is on a budget that was signed years and years ago. They've done continuing resolutions. I don't want to get too into the weeds here on the politics of it, Patrick. But I guess what I'm saying is this offers a very strange juxtaposition of the distribution of the funds ultimately, and whether Congress has to be the one to eventually come up with a plan to distribute buyouts, or whether the federal government can. I've just heard so much different information about whether people should take the buyouts because maybe they sign that piece of paper and the money never comes because it has to be allocated by Congress. It's complicated.
It's really complicated, and I think that's a good summary, and that's why it's going to be stuck in the courts for a while as to whether the administration can even do this. And then you're right, John. I mean, even if people do accept it, is the money going to be there? What if they do take the buyout? They're supposed to get paid, at least right now, through September, right? I don't know whether that's going to happen. They don't know whether that's going to. Frankly, nobody knows whether that's going to happen. So there's a lot of issues to work through, and people are understandably stressed out. Unfortunately, we just don't have answers right now. And so it's making people even more frustrated and alarmed.
Just kind of using the buyout as another issue in the private sector. Patrick, when people do get offered buyouts, what sorts of conversations do you as an employment lawyer want to have as you look over a buyout agreement? I'm sure you've encountered these in the past.
I have, yeah. And the first question is the company in a position to actually pay the buyouts that are offered to them, right? Because buyouts come oftentimes when the company is not doing well. And so the question is, are you being paid over time? That could be a red flag. Is it a lump sum that you actually think you're going to get? And what about benefits? Are you going to be provided compensation for benefits during that time? Are you going to be helped in any way to get your next job? So whether the company can actually fulfill these promises, that's the starting point when we're talking about buyouts.
Interesting. I would assume it's a contract between a company and a person. How could they break it? Is it just a matter of if the money's gone, the money may be gone? And sure, you might get some of it after bankruptcy court or something like that. But, you know, the company, if it doesn't have money, you're not going to get it.
That's exactly the issue. The question is, if they file bankruptcy, you're going to get pennies on the dollar, maybe, frankly. So the company may not be in a position to even fulfill that contract. Is it a breach of contract? Sure, of course it is. But the reality is, are you actually going to get that money? If the company goes bankrupt, probably not. But if it doesn't, you still may end up chasing that company if they're for money, if they're having real problems, which is indicative of the buyout to begin with. So it's a tough spot. You just have to do your best to paper it in the agreement and hope the company is solvent in a way that they can pay you out on those agreements.
The 847 has a question about furloughs. How do they work? Are they legal?
Yes, furloughs are legal. It's essentially a temporary layoff where they say, okay, you're going to be out for a specific period of time, and then we anticipate bringing you back on X date. Maybe they do, maybe they don't, but furloughs are legal. A lot of them are involved with public employees, whether it be local, state, federal employees. And so their functions of collective bargaining agreement terms and conditions, that's where you see those most common. So you have to be aware of those CBA terms and how they apply to furloughs. But generally speaking, yes, furloughs are legal.
Yeah. And they are obviously unpaid. And is there advance notice required, or can you find out immediately, hey, you're furloughed for a couple weeks and do with that what you want?
You know what, John? It really depends on the terms of the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, as to how much notice needs to be provided.
What about just a private company with no union they're working on the other side with?
Yeah, then that really depends. Then typically that's another function of contract. Usually they do not need to provide any notice unless there's a policy or some sort of agreement between the private company and the employer that they will provide such notice.
Okay. That's a complicated issue, but I know a lot of people end up going through that. Tell you what, why don't we take a break, Patrick Dolan? We'll put him on hold. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. 312-981-7200. Would love if you have any questions about your job. Just don't say the company's name, or maybe what you're going through. Maybe it's a discrimination issue. Maybe it's sick time. You weren't paid out. You thought you would be. FMLA, lots of answers that Patrick Dolan has for you. Patrick Dolan is, and our guests, for the most part, usually are. They're experts in these fields of law, and Patrick is our employment lawyer go-to. He's one half of Conti and Dolan, yes, of Karen Conti fame. She does the family law. Patrick Dolan does the employment law, so you're kind of a one-stop shop, Patrick.
Yeah, we got you covered, John, in terms of family issues and work issues. So Karen's a great law partner. I know you enjoy her show on Sundays. She's really informative.
She's awesome. Karen's the best. Our legal eagle that you can hear often here on WGN. By the way, Patrick, who's joining us in California, I just want to keep mentioning that because I'm jealous.
Thanks.
Because we've got some ice storms coming on through the area. But missed you at the Hawks game last night, Patrick.
I know. So how did that go?
They scored 6 goals. They won 6-2, baby.
That's incredible. Of course, I'm not there when they score 6 goals. I'll be back soon, so hopefully they score 6 goals again.
Yeah, right, exactly. No, it was an awesome environment. For anyone at the Hawks game last night, congratulations. You were a rocking crowd. It made a difference. Things were amazing last night. Friday night hockey. Got to love that. Hey, we got a caller, Patrick. You want to go to the phone lines? Let's get Samantha on the line. Hello, Samantha.
Good morning.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Okay.
All right. What do you got for Patrick?
So I work for an organization that notified us on this past Wednesday that the division I work for is being eliminated.
Mm.
And in the presentation to a larger subset of this organization was telling everybody how the reorg was going to be facilitated. There's about 50 people impacted, and they showed us that there's about 58 open roles.
Well, we just lost Samantha. We'll get her back here on the line here. Sorry, Samantha. Call back. That happens sometimes with the phone lines. Well, that didn't sound like a good start to that conversation, Patrick, with divisions in the company and people being reorganized. I don't think we have enough there without Samantha giving us more, but that's always a difficult thing for sure.
Yeah, let's talk about some general things. So first of all, I was going to ask about, you know, additional size. She said 50 people were getting laid off. I wonder if
we got Samantha back on the line. Samantha, are 50 people being laid off or are they being moved to other divisions?
Well, so the situation is such that the presentation to the larger portion, they were telling everybody it was not a reduction in headcount, but there was more open roles than people being impacted. But then the following day, we receive all of the people, the 50 people impacted, received notification of elimination of their role. And then,
we just lost her again. Patrick, walk through what you think about at least the basics of what you're hearing. Obviously, there's a lot of questions in play here. You don't have all the answers, but I know your brain's already spinning.
Yeah, so probably the WARN requirement of 60 days notice is probably not impacted. If they're trying to place people elsewhere, they're not actually losing their job. So WARN is probably not impacted, meaning, John, that they do not have to provide the 60-day notice. I'm curious, though, about if they're trying to place people in other jobs and they're not being placed, what are they doing with those people? Are they giving them separation packages? And if so, what do those look like? And oftentimes companies try to group people together, but then people have individual circumstances that may allow them to get a better separation package, whether it be discrimination, harassment, retaliation, or whatever it is. Those issues, John, that we've talked about a lot of times before about negotiating a separation agreement. So there are a lot of questions there.
Iridian went ahead and called Samantha back on the line. We are hoping works. You want to lock her in?
I'm sorry.
No, you are fine. It's probably our phone lines. We have issues every now and then again. Samantha, you probably heard her on GN. So no one's getting laid off and there's more openings now? What's going on here?
So I know I've been cut off. So there was a notification that there's more open roles than people impacted.
Okay.
And they were protecting the opportunity for the people impacted to apply for these roles for a finite amount of time. And then there will be some sort of panel interview to place those with, you know, the certain skill sets for all these new roles.
So it's not a guarantee that you can move over to a new job. You have to reapply.
No. Yes, we have to reapply. But then the termination notification we got that they want back before we can apply for these new roles does say it's an elimination of our jobs, and it does say it's a reduction in headcount. So you're
getting laid off with an opportunity to reapply, essentially.
Yes.
But you're still working did you work like Thursday and Friday?
Yes. It's not effective until they have a date on the notification that's when our...
If you don't know the exact date, that's fine. But like, is it next week or is it like far in the future?
No. It's a couple months. It's like a month and a half away.
So you got to work a month and a half without knowing, and you'll start going through this reapplication process to find out if you got a gig or not. Okay, Patrick, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, but then Samantha, did you say that you have to return a signed separation agreement before you can even apply to these other jobs?
Correct. And that's where it's fuzzy because it seems like they told the company one story, but then they told the people impacted another story, and they told us with an HR personnel on the phone that it was to protect our severance, but in my opinion, it seems like it's protecting the company because...
Oh, I'm sure it's helping them out and protecting them in some way. Patrick, tell you what, why don't we got the news coming up, Samantha. If you can hang on the line, great. Patrick, obviously you're not going anywhere. Let's dive into this a little bit more here because this is an interesting case of a company doing something that seems a little off to me. Patrick, just to recap Samantha's question, I'm going to bring Samantha back on in a moment to make sure I got it all right. But basically, she works for a company that said, hey, this we're going to do some restructuring, and 50 of you in this division, we do maybe have a job for you, but we are going to have you sign this separation agreement. Your end of employment is in 6 weeks or so, and we'll have you reapply for your jobs. And there are a bunch of openings, enough for all of you, but we're going to do a reapplication process. And Samantha, that's the crux of what happened, right?
Pretty much. And the only thing that doesn't sit well with the way it was presented to us was that when they announced the reorganization to the larger division, it was clearly stated more than once that this was not a reduction in headcount.
Hmm.
But then they want this this separation paperwork says it is. And, you know, for somebody on HR to say that it's to protect our severance, I don't know if there's some legal issue that they need to say that in order to provide you a severance.
I don't know, so because it's to me, it seems like if they don't want to reduce the headcount, then just move you all over to those jobs, like figure out where you're going to go in this company. A whole reapplication process seems a little strange. Patrick, what do you think about all of this?
Yeah, I think it sounds really strange. So my one question is, Samantha, are you reapplying for jobs in a different division?
No, we're all in the same division. It's just a reorganization as to the go-to-market strategy.
Yeah, well, it sounds like what they're doing is separating a bunch of people and saying that you can reapply for jobs, but because of the timing of everything, you have to decide whether to take that separation package before you can even reapply. So I don't, you know, that's not uncommon in the sense that people, you know, oftentimes people are provided separation agreements to think about, and then they're open and available to reapply for different jobs. But the fact that they're treating that as some sort of carrot doesn't make any sense to me at all, because what are the chances of you getting your job, and what if you are rehired? Do you forfeit the separation package?
Do you forfeit where the PTO that you've accrued? Maybe you're at a certain level and you've got so many days and now you're back to square one. The salary can be renegotiated back in time, right, Patrick? I mean, they could do anything. They could start back from fresh from you as a new employee.
You can't lose your accrued unused PTO. I understand what you're saying, John, on the larger point, which is entirely correct. Maybe they're doing it to readjust salaries to save the company some money, and they're calling it a restructuring and moving around some job responsibilities and into other jobs and making those positions paid less, or I don't know. There's a lot of questions there that need to be answered that I'm very concerned about.
Samantha, I would call Patrick. He's in California now. Patrick, can you take the call during the week?
Oh, sure. No, I'm working, John.
He's working, I know.
It just happens to be sunny outside, but I'm working.
And you'll be back soon.
Well, my only issue is they want this paperwork back on the termination portion with our personal contact information and our personal email by the end of business on Monday.
Wait. When did they provide you with the separation agreements?
Thursday.
Yeah, they need to give you 21 days to reconsider and sign. And if it's a group layoff, which it certainly sounds like it is, they need to give you 45 days to reconsider and sign. So being handed a separation and release agreement on Thursday and told they're due on Monday is not legal in the state of Illinois.
Does it impact where their headquarters are or what state this is being written out of?
No, it impacts where the division is. Like, where are you working, Samantha?
I work in Illinois.
Yep, then that's the law that should apply to you. As someone who works in Illinois, the law should apply to you in Illinois.
So my division is spread out across the Midwest?
But hey, you're in Illinois.
Ohio.
All that matters is that you're in Illinois.
So yeah, and you know what? Samantha, John's right. Let me be clear about something. So it depends where you live. typically, and work? Do you work in a facility in Illinois?
I'm a remote employee.
Okay. So if you live in Illinois, Illinois law should apply to you. I think that's the bottom line. And oftentimes companies have to send out separation agreements with a bunch of different addendums, including a bunch of different state laws, because people are in different places. So that's not unusual.
Samantha, I think you should call Patrick on Monday and just walk through this. I mean, that seems ridiculous. In 3 days, you have to make some sort of decision or separation agreement and agree to, it just seems kind of crazy what's going on here. Maybe there's some other loopholes or some other things that, Patrick, when you investigate further, okay, it's all up on the up and up. But on the basic smell test, Patrick, you sound skeptical.
I'm very skeptical. I'd love to talk to Samantha.
All right, let's put Samantha on hold. Samantha, thanks for the phone call. That was a great one. 312-332-7800 is Patrick's number, Samantha. 312-332-7800. We'll give that number out a couple more times before the show is over. All right, let's go to Paula on line two. Paula, what are you wondering about?
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I work for a small religious school.
Okay, private
in,
school.
Western suburbs. And they require us to use our phones, personal phones, for parent communication, transmitting pictures, everything.
They want you to use your personal phones for this?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's not in our contract, and we are not reimbursed in any form for the use of our phone.
Hmm.
And I just wondered, is that something they're required to do? I mean, it's different because it is a private religious school. Just wondering.
That's a great question. First of all, I'm shocked they wouldn't prefer you to be using like company phones, like the private school phones, just for like the idea of you're going to be communicating with parents and transmitting images. You would think that a school district, especially a private one, would want you to have work phones. Anyways, Patrick, any thoughts on that?
Yeah,
can I interject?
Oh, go ahead.
Please, go ahead, Paula.
I apologize. It's not a district. It's just a private.
Right. It's a private school, but it's a private company.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a company that runs a school. Right. Exactly.
You know what, John? I totally agree with you. And it's the opposite pretty much every single time. They don't want you to use your private phone. And frankly, you don't want to use your private phone because then they could have access to it. To look at, frankly, whatever they want. But to answer the question, no. If you're required to use your private phone for work purposes, you should be paid. That expense should be paid by the company. All right. That I think is pretty clear. I'm just surprised they even require that. That most companies would not want you to do that.
Yeah, that seems strange to me. And
maybe
also,
John? Maybe they're doing it just to try to save themselves some money.
Right.
But they should pay for that.
Paula, go ahead.
Yeah, and actually, in regard to taking photographs of children, I use an iPad because I don't want the photos on my phone.
Right.
Just in case someone makes an allegation.
Right. Or if, God forbid, like your phone got hacked, or I don't know, it's somewhere in the cloud, these kids' photos are being taken, you'd think you'd want private phones on private encrypted networks that would be completely isolated from you as a person to protect you, to protect the kids, to protect the parents. Seems like a no-brainer, Paula.
Yeah, Paula, let me take it one step further. So if you're using your phone for work-related purposes, even though it's your phone, you have a significantly diminished confidentiality right to the I know that sounds ridiculous, to the information on your phone, even though it's personal information. Okay, so that's another issue and concern that I have for
like
you.
What could happen, Patrick? Meaning the idea that if they want to see your communications between you, let's say it's not a school. Let's say it's your phone and you're a salesperson, they wanted to see all your communications with clients. They'd have a right to depose that off your personal phone.
Yes. That's exactly the point, John. And then you get into the issue of, okay, is this information company information? Is it my personal information? Who's going to make that decision? Where does the phone have to go? Usually a third-party vendor. Who's going to look at all that? And then you got to decide, what belongs to the company, what belongs to the person. It's just a really messy issue. And for people who are concerned about their confidentiality, I tell people all the time, do not use your personal devices for work-related issues, because you have almost no right to privacy when you do.
Here's my question, though, Patrick. In Paula's case or in other cases, and I know you don't know the exact specifics, you'd have to look into it more, but is this something that is just seems unfortunate, or are there legal rules being broken? Meaning, like...
No.
Go ahead.
No, John, you're right. Yeah, there are legal rules being broken, because there are certain expenses that employers need to pay. Okay, that's what I'm saying. Let's be clear.
Okay, so this is actually an issue that Paula could call you about, and maybe something can be done here. I know that's difficult. And if Paula or anyone were to call you and was a little afraid of you ruffling any feathers by writing a letter to this private company or the school or another company if someone else calls, saying you should be paying for the cell phone use that you are requiring Paula or someone else to use. If Paula or someone was worried about, oh, well, they're going to retaliate against me because I'm ruffling feathers, they're protected from that too, right?
Yeah, that would be a retaliation claim. And by the way, John, I don't have to get explicitly involved. I can just help craft an email that can point out these things in a way that I think is pretty straightforward and not, you know, real acrimonious. It's just a good thing to do, and I do that all the time, help people craft an email that sounds like and looks like it comes from them, but it gets the point across.
Yeah. Paul, I think you need to call Patrick, 312-332-7800, just to chat through this issue for him. It doesn't seem like it's immediately pressing, but it's on your mind, and I think you're bringing up some really valid points, not only for yourself, Paula, but for other people, because we're getting a bunch of questions about this now. Paula, thanks for calling, okay?
Thank you.
Got a question on the text line, Patrick. Is it legal for a company to not pay you for PTO time? I think I could probably stop asking the question right there and you'd have an answer, but I'll finish it. Is it legal for a company not to pay you the PTO time that you rolled over into the new year, but then you resigned? What do you think?
No, they have to pay it. Any accrued, unused PTO needs to be paid out at time of termination in Illinois. And so if you're allowed to roll it over per company policy and it's banked, then you should be paid out that PTO when you leave.
As
for
long
any
as
reason. Doesn't matter why you leave, why you're leaving.
Whether you're fired, whether you leave on your own, whatever the case, you get your PTO. That doesn't mean sick time, though.
No, it does not mean sick time. There's Illinois law does not obligate employers to pay out accrued unused sick time. We're only talking about PTO / vacation.
Okay. And they could still follow the rules. Like if you had 80 hours, but you're only allowed to roll over 10 and you resign after the new year, they only pay you out the 10. You just got to follow the handbook.
That's correct.
And if you're someone that you get it at the beginning of the year, right? Like they're just like, oh, we'll give you 10 days starting on day one. Even if you resign on day two, you get those 10 days.
That's correct, because you've accrued it. It depends how much you've actually accrued.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Tony has a question. Tony, is this something going on with you, or you have a follow-up to Samantha? What are you thinking?
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah. I mean, the question is, why can a company that has multiple divisions or different brands of companies not allow somebody from one division or company to try to get a job at the one of the other companies?
So you're saying there's like a bigger company that has all these subdivisions, and you're saying why can't they just allow someone to move to another either subdivision or company under another name, but it's still under the same parent company? Is that what you're asking, Tony?
Yeah. I mean, I know that this has happened in the past with a restaurant group, mm-hmm. and could be in one restaurant group and had to set another total brand that had all the same positions, et cetera. But there was, if nothing else, there was an unwritten rule that HR would not consider you if you were leaving your job at company A and was trying to find a similar job at company B.
Even if it's the same ultimate boss. Yeah. Patrick, any thoughts on that? I mean, I think that's probably a company by company rule.
Yeah, it is. I mean, companies can offer you jobs in different locations and you can take them if you want. The question is, can they mandate that you relocate? No, typically. And then that's where the separation agreement will come in, if I understand his question correctly. So they can offer jobs in different places. They don't have to.
Right.
Usually by contract. But they can certainly do it. But I think the larger question is the separation agreement. You know, it doesn't. It's not real meaningful to give someone a separation agreement and then say that they can go ahead and take another job, and then you won't get that money, but then you don't have a chance to apply for it until after you decide to accept the separation agreement. That doesn't make any sense at all to me.
Yeah. 847 has a question. The personal phone things has given people a lot of questions. Yes. Someone was wondering, many employees, have you used your personal phone to like verify a security login? Should that company pay for their personal phones? To me, that doesn't seem to... Wait, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Okay. I mean, the Illinois Labor Code law says that really that employers have to reimburse for job-related expenses when they use them for work-related issues on their personal cell phone. I don't think that's going to rise to the level,
right,
John. Yeah.
Clicking one button is different than asking you to communicate with parents.
Yeah.
And there could be an agreement that's worked out, right? Let's say it's like, all right, I use my phone, roughly 40% of it is work, 60% is personal, and they can reimburse you accordingly, right?
Yeah, and you know what, John? Those are typically in policies and handbook policies of employers. They talk specifically about personal cell phone use and what is and is not actually allowed, and if it's allowed, whether they're going to, or mandated, if they're going to pay you back. So that's all in employee handbook.
Right. Okay, Patrick, that's great stuff. You gave us a lot of things to chew on. 312-332-7800 is where people can go to call you, Patrick. Speaking of chew on, I'm looking at the green room, and Mike Leonard is chewing on something over there. He is itching to get on in here, Patrick, and wants to kick you off the air as soon as possible.
Geez, let him in.
He's got to finish his sandwich first. Hopefully he brought me something.
Hi to my buddy.
Usually he does bring me food, I will say. Mike, you bring me anything today?
Good.
He did. All right. Patrick, I got to let you go. He brought food for me.
I know. All right. Good to talk to you, John.
You too. Take care. That's Patrick Dolan of Conti and Dolan.